Hello, and welcome to the Rooted in Reliability podcast, your plant performance podcast, where we dive deeper into asset management techniques and know-how. I'm your host, James Kovacevic, and I will be your guide to achieving industry best practice. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is here to provide you with the insights to improve plant performance and deliver bottom-line results to your organization. In case you missed the last episode, you can find the Rooted in Reliability podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and on the reliability.fm network. Don't forget to subscribe so you'll never miss an episode. Now let's dive into today's topic.
It is my pleasure to welcome back Scott Kelly, Managing Director of Geometric Reliability. Welcome back, Scott.
Thank you, James. I appreciate it.
It's a pleasure having you back here with us today to continue this series on the various cells within an asset management model. Previous episodes, we talked about people and the importance of people. In the last episode, we talked about the plant, you know, setting up that asset hierarchy, having that CMMS, and a variety of other great topics. Now, today, we're going to talk about processes. What can you tell us about processes that is so important in an asset management model?
Well, if you keep in mind, we were talking specifically not only about asset management models, but the plant excellence model in particular. And we talked about the people cell, the plant cell, right, the physical assets, and now we're talking about processes. If you can see, we're following a pattern of alliteration here to make it easy for people to remember. So when you're talking about processes, and what we are talking about here is processes related to asset management, i.e. maintenance, reliability, MRO that goes with that. So the definition, I mean, really, of a process is a visual representation of work depicted in flow diagrams. They demonstrate a mapped or a chronological path to include alternative paths that are taken when you accomplish a specific task, and they include decision making. Now, we are going to talk about policies and procedures in the next installment, but I think it's really important very quickly to talk about how processes and policies and procedures are interconnected. And I know I have them in separate cells, but I do that on purpose. A policy is something that we're trying to accomplish that is so important that there's a specific need for governance over that. And that need dictates why we create a policy. A procedure is the method that we're going to actually accomplish that governance. And then the processes take those procedures and put them again in a graphical depiction with decision making as part of that. So they are tied directly together. Does that make sense, James?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. So when you take the time to map out a process, gives the end users a chance to look at what actually occurs in accomplishing that task. And we call that the as is. In other words, that's what we're actually doing today. It gives us the ability to look at, well, what is the to be? In other words, what is the most efficient or a more efficient method of doing it? And how do we actually accomplish that? Right?
Now, Scott, quick question for you before we move on. So you mean you actually have to document how these things work within your plant? You can't just leave it to the guy who's been doing it for 20 years?
Well, you could do that, but chances are in any kind of a situation, if you do not have a mapped process, then most likely you are doing it 2, 3, 4 different ways and not even realizing it. So part of the exercise of mapping the as is, in other words, how we're doing it today, is doing a facilitated approach, working with people to ask them, how do you accomplish specific tasks? And as a facilitator of that, or as a consultant, I'm always looking for keywords that I consider to be almost like a red flag. For example, when you ask somebody, well, how do you get that approved? And they say, well, that depends. And the moment they say those kind of questions, it's a red flag that goes off in the back of my head, because the moment they say that depends, then you have a decision matrix, or you obviously got workarounds, et cetera, that are going on.
Yep. Now, do you find any resistance to documenting these processes?
Not for the most part, no. They really don't. Because most people, I mean, are wanting to get the job done. It's not like they're hiding what they're doing. If they've created a workaround, it's probably because the process that's in place or the ad hoc process in place is so hard that a workaround is what they're doing, not because they're lazy, but because they want to get their job done. And if it's too hard to get the job done one way, they're going to try and find a workaround.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense.
Have you found it different in your world, James, that they don't want to talk about it?
Some people, depending on the maturity of the organization and also their fear, I guess, I want to say fear, resist it. You know, if I document this, then you guys can get rid of me and bring someone else in to do it and so on and so forth. You know, you get some of that sometimes. But for the most part, people want to have a clear path to achieve their goal and do their job. But I do find sometimes you get those individuals who don't want to do it.
Well, and occasionally when I do the facilitated approaches relative to mapping out a process, I don't always have management in the room. And therefore, when I document the process, I don't say who said what or how they said it. We're just documenting how things get done.
Yep.
And by doing so, I try and keep it a little anonymous and therefore remove some of that fear from the people in the discussion.
Okay. Perfect. Sorry to sidetrack you. Just want to make sure we identify some of those potential issues our listeners may come against.
I understand. So let's go back a little bit, though, and recap what we were talking about. Right? When you take the time to map out the process, it gives the end user, one, an identification of what you're doing today. In other words, we're calling that the as-is. Two, it gives you a ability to alter the path to be a to-be. Three, if, in fact, there are alternate paths or methods to accomplish the task, it gives you the ability to identify those and then streamline or eliminate, depending on what's the situation. Four, it gives the information that must be available in each of these boxes in order to make a decision to move on. And that's probably one of the most crucial components is if, in fact, you need information in a box to be able to move on to the next box, that also dictates functionality requirements within the CMMS or the work management or workflow process and how you do that. Okay?
Yep.
Okay. Next, we're talking about the verification for regulatory documentation. And then the seventh thing is the ability to assign roles and responsibility to specific tasks within the diagram. It makes it much, much, much easier to talk about that, right?
Yes, because it's clear what steps are there, what information is needed, and then you can clearly link who needs to execute those tasks because they have that information, they have that authority, they have all those other things that allows them to accomplish that work.
That's correct. Now, digressing a little bit, for example, in our last installment, we talked about having a CMMS, an AMS system, an EAM system, basically a work management computerized methodology. Too many times I see companies go out and buy a system or even develop a system, and they really do not have a good understanding of what the functionality is that they need that matches their business processes. So if, in fact, you're going to look at getting a CMMS or buying a CMMS, one of the first things you need to do is not only map your as-is, but you need to map the to-be, and not just as-is at one location. If you are a multi-site company, if you're a multiple business unit company, if in fact you've grown through acquisitions, it becomes more and more and more important that you actually map out how people are doing business today in all of your business units so that you can truly understand what is going to be required to go to a 2B that actually matches not only one business unit's needs, but all business units' needs. If you're going to be on a single instance. Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely. And that's, I couldn't agree more with the CMMS comment. I find a lot of organizations will not document their process, map their process accordingly, implement the CMMS, and then try to make it work for them. It's the wrong way. You got to understand what functionality you need, how you want to use the system, that sort of stuff ahead of time. Even if you're not there yet, you need to know where it fits in the long term.
That's right. It has to be a model or a vision of where we're trying to be and where we're trying to go. From a timeliness standpoint, I actually was with a pipeline company yesterday, as a matter of fact, trying to re-implement their CMMS, and they've been trying to do this now for almost 10 years. And their issue is that they did not go through the as-is. They went straight to a 2B, and they have grown through acquisition over the last 10 years to the tune of 10 or 15 different companies. And now they're having to go back and start over because they really didn't understand the business needs for each of the different business units.
So they've been struggling for 10 years because they didn't map it out, the as-is, now the 2B. That's unfortunately, that's not all that uncommon.
It's not. That's why I bring it up. It's not that uncommon. So I see it quite frequently, actually. So, you know, and again, some of the other things to keep in mind when we're talking about this as we move forward, right? To effectively visually represent a process, there's critical dimensions that need to be included in that process. We're talking about who, the what, the when, the where, weathers, W-H-E-T-H-E-R, weather, what degree or how much, and what frequency, for example, how often. You know, I know that sounds a little bit like the old questions you talk about in terms of journalism, in terms of who, what, when, why, how, etc. And that's exactly what it is. Okay, does that make sense? And we're going to talk about each one of those briefly.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great way for people to remember what is actually required in that process map.
Right. So as you're developing the process map, right, here in the U.S., just kidding, the who, right? What we're talking about here is who does the work, who authorizes the work, who hands off the work, and who do they hand it off to, who verifies or changes the work, who approves the changes. So you keep asking who until you have considered all the stakeholders. And I didn't make up this acronym, but I thought it was a very good acronym. It was created by a gentleman named Robert Boehringer. He works for Orion Development Group, and it's called SOCCER. S-O-C-C-E-R is the acronym. And what we're talking about here is S being suppliers, O being owners, B being customers, C being community of employees is what we're talking about here, right? E being the employees, and the R being regulators, which is validators or regulatory issues. So keep in mind when you're talking about the who, it's very easy to use that acronym SOCCER. And I'll say those very quickly one more time so that you get everything that's in that, right? Suppliers, owners, customers, community, employees, and regulators. It's a very good way to do that.
Absolutely. That's a fantastic acronym for that.
Okay. And then dealing with the map formatting, right, for the dimension, you know, responsibility matrix and or a swim lane charts are the best way. Okay?
Yep.
Okay. What? When we're talking about that, we're talking about what work is being done. But you're also talking about what work is not being done in that same process. In other words, what's not happening, and that has to be added to that. In other words, what is the value add and what's the non-value add work that occurs during these functional silos? What waste occurs? From a waste standpoint, we're talking about what here, right? I was dealing with a company and they literally were losing about 400 man hours a month, waiting for permits. So looking at that permitting process really advocated a huge manpower savings for them.
Oh, absolutely. But that's a tremendous amount of lost manpower.
Right. And it was only 30 minutes a day, give or take, but the 30 minutes a day times the number of workers you're talking about standing around, it accumulates very, very quickly. Okay? When? So now we're talking about when is the work actually being done? And we're also talking about, is there any kind of relative correlation before or after an event? Does it occur on an ad hoc basis? Does it occur regularly scheduled? The when dimension provides movement, flow, or a feeling of chronological series. And the good maps to use for that type of decision is to include the logic flows, the workflow diagram, or swim lanes as well. Okay?
Yep.
All right, where? Where is the work being accomplished physically? Which building, which cubicle, which floor, right? Within a facility, and some larger facilities, that could be a major aspect. And whether or not, when you say where, does it constitute any additional questions relative to safety, to special needs that go on with that, okay, i.e. confined space. So whether, this whether is the work that's being done or is it a nice to have? In other words, does it must happen? Is it regulatory compliance? Is it on critical assets? Or is it just a nice to have? What triggers this type of work being done? Are we talking about painting someone's desk? Are we talking about the light is out in the emergency exit?
Two major different, or two highly different activities with different consequences.
That's right. And, you know, looking at this type of work of weather, i.e. it's a decision process here, you're talking about a top-down chart, logic flow, flow process chart, or state change charts that are the best way to document those. Okay? What degree or how much? How much of the process can one participant accomplish? Are there boundaries? Is there skill, or does it require authorization? How much work needs to be done to achieve acceptable levels of performance? Right? The what degree dimension reveals excessive standardization, but we have to look at that as it relates to, or regard to the participants involved. Am I on track here with you, James?
Yep, absolutely. So that what I think is critical, because it provides that, to what degree, it provides that criteria that they use to evaluate, are we going to do this, how are we going to do it, that sort of stuff.
Right. Do we need specialists? Is it something that's more general or broader?
Yes.
Do I need a subject matter expert to come in? So let's talk about this other one, you know, the frequency, the how often. How often is the work happening? What triggers the work? Is it time passing? Is it a completion of another activity? Is it tied to other activities? In other words, we can't get this done until we've done something else first. Right? Do I have to remove insulation using one set of criteria as a rule to dictate another? Right? The frequency of this is highly dependent on what's the cycle or what's the process that goes through with this.
Yep.
Okay.
This podcast is brought to you by Iridicio. Be sure to check out iridicio.com for a free copy of their ebook, A Smarter Way of Preventative Maintenance. This ebook will allow you to review your current maintenance program and eliminate the non-value-added work you're doing, which is most likely causing you more downtime than it is preventing. www.iridicio.com.
You know, let's talk about some of the processes that I think should be mapped. By no means is this all of them, but definitely should be mapped. For example, operations. If you are running an operation that is not 24/7, if you have frequent startup and shutdowns, then having the startup and shutdown mapped is extremely crucial, to include also time and duration required to do it or any delays in that, because you could have a lot of people standing around waiting for startup.
I see so many organizations that don't have a shutdown and startup procedure. They come in Monday morning, they fire up the equipment, and it takes them a day to get running again to an acceptable level because it was not shut down in a consistent way. It was not started up in a consistent way. It just introduces so much variable into the process that no organization can sustain that in the long haul.
That's right. I mean, if you go back to lean, and everybody talks about lean, and really what you're talking about is optimizing. It takes you a whole day to get your equipment to a status where you are making a quality product. You've literally lost a day of production of OEE, right?
Yes, absolutely.
But just like your car, just like anything else, most of the damage that's occurring is during startup and shutdown, and it really, really is advocated if, in fact, you do it improperly. Okay? Let's talk just asset management then, right? From an asset management or a maintenance standpoint, let's talk about work. How do I identify my work? How do I plan it? How do I schedule it? How do I actually assign the work? How is the work executed? How is the work closed out or audited? Is there a QA or QC process that's tied back into that work? just at a minimum, those should be done, right? We're also talking about parts. How about this? When you get an inventory of your MRO-related parts, which includes consumables, right? You need to look at the parts requisitioning process, parts ordering process, parts purchasing, parts being pulled from inventory, whether or not and how they're kitted, adding parts to an inventory, to your inventory level as a permanent spare part, what approvals are required or is there approval process tied back to that? How do we calculate max mins on pieces of equipment or new pieces of equipment that are coming out of the project or the inventory? Receipt of parts in your spare parts. Does the receipt of parts require any kind of inspection or testing? Inventory cycle counts, regulatory affairs, management of change, permitting, hazardous work review. Those are all regulatory issues, not parts. But, I mean, they should also be done from a standpoint of understanding how we do those processes.
Yes, absolutely. And without those documented processes, it's almost impossible to have a highly functioning storeroom that's not wasting parts, not throwing stuff out because of obsolescence. Same thing with work management. If you don't have that standard for planning work, for scheduling work, for evaluating work, doing all those things, chances are you might not be doing the right work and you're not really delivering that benefit to the organization.
Yeah, and what I have found, and I don't know that this is true in all cases, but I would say it is true in the majority of cases. If you do not have your work processes mapped, if you do not have process flow or workflow maps to go by and actually adhered to, then I promise you are doing work two or three different ways and it's all undocumented and you cannot control a process. I.e. Deming 101 is if I cannot remove the variables, there's no way to control a process.
Yeah, I agree 100% with that.
That's all I have relative to processes today. So, but in summary, I mean, I think that what we just said is the summary of this. It's imperative to have processes mapped or you will not be able to control the process.
Now, one quick question before we end on this topic then. For someone who doesn't have their processes mapped, where do they start?
Always start with your as is. The easiest way to figure out what you're doing today is as is. I highly suggest you use somebody from not necessarily the outside, but outside of that work environment. It has to be non-punitive. It has to be a facilitated approach. Because if one person tries to map out the process, they are not going to know all the workarounds.
Perfect. That's a great piece. Identifying all those workarounds, it's vitally important if when you're going to try and develop that too.
That's correct.
All right. Well, Scott, I appreciate your time. It was a fantastic discussion around the importance of processes. And what we're going to do for our listeners is if you go to www.hpreliability.com/processes, we'll have a PDF download of this exact topic for you. And be happy to give that to you. And thank you, Scott, for providing that.
Not a problem at all. And if for some reason that doesn't work and they need to reach out to me directly, you can find me on my website or on a general email address off the website, which is geometricreliability.com.
Yep, and we'll include links to both Geometric Reliability's website, their LinkedIn page, and your LinkedIn page as well.
Thank you very much.
All right, Scott. Until next time when we discuss policies and procedures, thank you and have a great day.
Thank you very much, James. Bye-bye.
I would like to thank you for listening and remind you that you can always find out more on maintenance, reliability, and asset management at www.iridicio.com and by following our blog. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is a proud member of the Reliability.fm network. I'd like to ask you to please rate and review this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. It ensures the podcast stays relevant and is easy to find by like-minded professionals. It is only with your ratings and reviews that the Rooted in Reliability podcast can continue to grow. I thank you for providing this small but critical support. We'll see you next week when we dive into another burning topic with Rooted in Reliability, your plant performance podcast.